imagine a Broadway musical that unfolds like this piece by Rachmaninoff. Disenchanted with the do-or-die economics of the huge Broadway productions, Stephen Sondheim decided to sever his 15-year partnership with Hal Prince and develop his new work through the more gradual evolutionary process of the Off-Broadway Workshop. Joining playwright director James Lapine, he and Lapine began the development of Sunday in the Park with George in this less stressful setting. The source of their inspiration was the life and work of the painter Georges Seurat, primarily his huge masterpiece, A Sunday Afternoon on the Island of La Grande Jatte. Initially, Sondheim had not conceived of any narrative at all, intending to structure the piece as a theatricalization of a musical theme and variation. He said, "Every time I listen to Rachmaninoff's variations on a theme of Paganini, I'm stunned. And I thought it would be fun to try theatrically." When we'd fastened on the idea of using Seurat's painting and showing how it was made in the first act, I was all excited because I thought the second act could be a series of variations or comments on the painting. This intriguing form was modified, however, when Lapine insisted that interest in form alone was insufficient to sustain audience attention, that a narrative continuity was necessary to make the piece dramatically viable. Nonetheless, Sondheim fulfilled his aims to a significant degree by using music, lyrics, even characters in patterns whose significance is fully appreciated only when refracted through the audience's perception, just the way pointillism, the style in which Seurat paints, works. Notes, words, and rhythm patterns are Sondheim's primary units of expression. The choice of each is critical. Because creating a work of art involves a myriad of small-scale decisions, Sondheim rejects the notion that the artist is suddenly visited by inspiration, with the work pouring forth spontaneously from inner genius. Seurat's painstaking, almost ploddingly methodical approach to art is something to which Sondheim readily relates. Speaking of hats.
Finishing the hat. How you have to finish the hat. How you watch the rest of the world from a window while you finish the hat.
As Sondheim explains, Seurat put hundreds of thousands of dots on that canvas, and every one was a separate decision. Some people say there were 5 million individual decisions, and that is what art is. You spend 4 days working out the flower on the hat. Then you spend 10 days working on the hat. Then you have 20 other hats to do. Then all the hats are part of a pattern. Then you start working on the face. It is just hard work. This is the side of creativity Sondheim wants to dramatize, the rigorous, unglamorous, often monotonous dedication required of the artist. And what is wonderful is that the thematic focus of Sunday in the Park with George centers on the nature of artistic creativity. What does it mean to be an artist? How does one make art? And most significantly, how does being an artist affect relationships with the world and other people? When you start thinking about it, Sondheim said, there are all kinds of analogies. It started from the painting, and the more I found out about Seurat, the more I realized, my God, this is all about music. Seen from a distance, Seurat's painting is a harmonious ideal, nature and humanity balanced in an ordered world. Perhaps the most important affinity between the 19th century painter and the 20th century composer-lyricist lies in their individual commitment to artistic perfection. The emotional subtext of this musical probes the isolation implicit in this kind of obsession. Sunday in the Park with George not only mirrors Sondheim's need to shatter tired categorizations, it is a clear example of his ability to redefine the genre of musical theater. It also forces Sondheim's audiences to rediscover aesthetic truth through his art. Consequently, this musical not only dramatizes its subject matter, it is the thing itself.
Tension. Balance.
That from Art Isn't Easy by Joanne Gordon. Nor is it easy, as we'll learn, to mount a production of Sunday in the Park with George. And that seems to explain why it is that the musical is rarely produced in areas like ours. And yet, there are creative artists who want to take on such a challenge because the results of such hard work, to quote Sondheim, are bringing to life something beautiful, something powerful that will affect us deeply. And it is hoped, lastingly. Gaslight Theatre will present Sunday in the Park with George this weekend and next in the Maffei Theatre at King's College in Wilkes-Barre. Dave Reynolds, chair and production manager of the theatre department at King's, directs the musical, and he stopped in at the WVIA Benko studio to talk about the work and his passion for Stephen Sondheim, remembering the composer-lyricist's passing on November 26th, 2021.
It was a few days after he passed where many of the people on Broadway went and sang Sunday in, I think it was Herald Square, just sort of like impromptu. Lin-Manuel Miranda read from, you know, the Finishing the Hat book, and it was beautiful. And, you know, I watched it hundreds of times and cried and cried. And there's something about that song, this show, all of his shows are wonderful, but this show really speaks to what it means to be an artist, what it means to think about creativity and the things that maybe you'll sacrifice to have that in your life. And like everyone else, I think I was utterly devastated and then got in my mind that I had to do a Sondheim as soon as I possibly could. So, and this is only the second one that I've ever directed, Sweeney Todd being the first.
We know this is a monumental undertaking. It's not like you have a flat and you have a few singers.
Yeah, to say the least. This is, I mentioned to someone the other day that this particular show demands every department in the theater to bring their A game, whether that's, you know, the performers or the, you know, a set designer, a lighting designer, a sound designer. This show is monumentally difficult. And I think that's largely why it isn't produced on the regional level very often. We are extremely lucky to have, you know, an angel donor on this one, Michelle Millington, who's also our music director. She and our set designer, Michael Gallagher, saw the original production in New York with Bernadette and Mandy Patinkin. And I think, you know, Michelle just wanted to see this show get done because it's such a beautiful show. And, you know, you can't do it without money. You can't do it without really, really talented people across the board. And we're very lucky that we have that extremely talented cast, extremely talented creative team, and it's still really hard, really, really hard.
And even if you were just doing the first act, I've read the Playwrights Horizon story about how they did the first act and told the audience, well, maybe we'll get the second act in a while.
Right.
But that alone is a monument.
Yeah, I mean, the play itself takes a, you know, it's a 100-year jump from Act 1 to Act 2. So Act 1 is about George Seurat and his painting the Sunday afternoon on the island of the Grand Jatte and the people that create the world for him. We talk a little bit about whether or not he's creating the world or if they're creating the world for him, but it's that famous Boneless painting. Everybody knows it. It's hanging in a museum in Chicago now. And Act 1 is about that, but it's about so much more than that. And then Act 2 is his great-grandson, George, who's also an artist, who's doing this installation piece with lasers and things. So that's another fun thing. And both of them really explore the life of an artist and what finding connection and in Act One, the things that George sacrifices for his art, right? Which is love and family and many other things. And then I think in Act Two, great-grandson George kind of maybe sees things a little bit differently than the original George did. So, but yeah, they're both completely different and both very difficult.
You are a set designer yourself par excellence. And this is a critical show because we're talking about, aren't we, creating a painting or some suggestion of
Rorschach. And not only creating the painting, but creating the painting in several different stages because he's working on it throughout the entire act. So like he'll say things like, I hate that tree, and then the tree disappears. He's literally creating the world around him. So, you know, in the original production, it was all painted scenery that flew in, that came up from the floor, that tracked in from the right and the left. And, you know, that's very, very difficult. So we are using a lot of projections in this one. Mike Vavzinic is designing our projections. He's extremely talented. Michael Gallagher, who's a legend, is doing our set design. And the two of them are working very closely. I'm the tech director, so I'm building it. But those guys are creating the world. So we're doing it on stage at the Maffei Theater at King's. So, you know, we don't have the fly space and all the space that they might have on Broadway. So we're being really creative in the way that we're making the world. But there's going to be elements that, you know, if you've seen the original production, we're trying to get as close to it as possible. But yeah, it's an undertaking for sure. But I think that a play like this, honestly, you need the spectacle, but the music and the story are so beautiful that I think it would work if they were in jeans and a t-shirt. We also have a wonderful costume designer, Autumn Galka, wonderful lighting designer, Jonathan Voico, our sound designer, Alan Bonk, like just a really wonderful team of people. And it couldn't happen without those people.
And you mentioned that Michelle is your music director, and I ran into her at a WVIA TV taping, and she said that she had to do it. It was as if, I don't know whether she used the phrase bucket list, but she,
well,
as
she
you
did.
Described.
She did.
What is it that draws her to the music of this? Not just that she's seen it, but why is she passionate about this music?
So I think, you know, I don't want to speak completely for her, but we've talked a lot about it, so I don't think she'd mind. The score is beautiful, but the score itself is pointillistic, much like the painting, right? And so Sondheim has created this score where there's, you know, there's wonderful, beautiful ballads, but there's also so much dissonance, and he makes up for the moments of dissonance with this wonderful, I mean, there's many moments, but there's this, like, at the end of Act One, the painting finally comes together, and the entire score is just so lush and beautiful. You know, I think for her, it's a challenge, but it's also, I think for all of us that are working on this, I think we've all mentioned bucket list at least once. I know some of the actors too are like, our two leads are coming from East Stroudsburg to Wilkes-Barre every day to rehearse. So there's something that's drawing people to the show. And I think it's that it's so beautiful and it's so rarely done, right? And so I think for Michelle, I mean, she said, I just want to see someone do it. And so we're unbelievably lucky that she picked Gaslight to be the company that would help her out with that. But yeah, the score is, I mean, I'm sure you know it. It's gorgeous, but it's also like, again, I keep going using the word difficult, and not that it's a bad thing, but that it's a bucket list for a theater person to get to put on a show like this, because if you can rise to this challenge, you know, I felt very much the same way when I directed Angels in America. It's a challenge that I wanted to undertake. Can I do this? I think that's why everybody's doing this, honestly.
And are there living, breathing musicians?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Michelle is assembling a wonderful group of musicians. We won't see them till closer to opening, so it's just been Michelle and her piano now. But I believe it's a 12-piece orchestra, so, yeah.
You're holding nothing back, as you said.
Well, hopefully not. No. I mean, at whatever time and budget will allow, we're gonna go for it with this one.
What kinds of numbers in the cast are there?
I believe we have 17. Yeah, it's a good-sized cast. And many, many actors that I have not worked with before. And so that's been awesome, getting to know a whole bunch of new theater people. But I think to a person, they're all really, really just enamored with this piece. I will say there's one young actor. Her name's Kira. We found her at KISS, and she's awesome. But she had no idea what this show was. And I said, what'd you think? As she's like, well, I watched the original Broadway and I got a little bored and I looked at my phone and I was like, it's okay. We won't tell anybody. But she's fantastic. She's exactly the kind of precocious young lady that we need in this show. So, and she gets it.
And so you don't want Act Two to be a completely different show. Mm-hmm. So how is the piece created so there are those reverberations and echoes from one to two?
Yeah, so I mean, it's really directly linked, obviously, because of the relation with George. But then the female lead is named, in Act One, is Dot, right? And that's the love interest of George. And it doesn't work out. But then, you know, you find out in Act One that Dot is pregnant with George's child and that Dot is leaving to go to America with her new husband, Louis, the baker. And then in Act Two, the actress who plays Dot plays Marie, who is the baby. But she's 98 years old in Act Two. And so she's, I guess, the grandmother of George, right? And so there's that familial connection. And part of it is Marie trying to convince George that he is who she says he is, because he doesn't really believe her. Then he starts to understand that he is, you know, that this is his legacy. And it also all comes together. Act Two ends with George going back to the island, and it's all buildings and skyscrapers and kind of the, but then Dot comes to visit George, right? And there's a beautiful song called Move On that she sings about him needing to make something new, because he's sort of like, he does these laser shows and it's called Chromalume Number 7. So he's done this 7 times before. So everyone's sort of like, you're going back to the same well. So it's a lot of George trying to, just like Act One George, find something new and different, something that's his. And so Dot comes and tells him that. And then the painting's recreated again, as if to like, there's a beautiful song a little earlier called Children in Art, where Marie sings about, this is your family, this is your legacy. And he realizes it. So it's a wonderful way to tie the whole thing together.
And George working pointillistically with light, and then George working with lasers, yeah, and light. So there are those echoes, right?
Correct. And the, you know, the piece that opens Act Two, his laser piece, is an homage to the painting, right? So it's part informational, explaining who Georges Seurat was, but also talking about the process that he used to create the painting, which is really, I mean, I'm sure everybody's learned about this in elementary school. Like, the pointillism obviously is the dots, right? But what Seurat did with the piece was he blended the colors. He only used 11 colors in the painting, right? So if you see black, there's no black in it. He used different complementary colors that he did the dots. So when you stand back and look at it, your eye creates the black, right? And so by doing that also, people talk about how the painting seems like it's almost like shimmering. So he was able to create this kind of light through oil painting with a method that no one had ever done before. So pretty cool stuff.
And as a set designer wearing that hat, Dave, the sense we get in reading about the painting is that Seurat staged the figures, mm-hmm, in wanted these figures here and those figures there and that figure there. And that's almost like a frozen stage moment.
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely. You think the same way with the composition that you do as a director or a designer. The really interesting thing too, you know, in the play, and I think in real life, when he was in the park in his plein air kind of things, he wasn't painting. He was just sketching, right? He was sketching with charcoal, and then he would go back to his studio and do all the painting. So it's always in his mind. Like, he remembered. So he's sketching in black and white or, you know, browns, but he's creating the colors somewhere else, which is really interesting. You know, the play is really great because they look at when Lapine and Sondheim created it, they looked at the painting and they created stories for these people. And this is this person with the parasol is Celeste, and this person is Jules, and this person is Yvonne. And no one really knows, right? But they created this story. And so then we're playing around with the idea of, like, you know, are these people in George's mind? Are these people real? And like, it's really kind of neat because there's connections. The biggest, I think, if I had to say what the play was about with one word, I would say connection, or the lack of connection. And George says it several times, connect, George, connect. His mother is there, you know, and there's a beautiful song actually called Beautiful. You know, it's about, he can connect with the art, but he can't connect with people. And in Act Two, George is kind of going the other way with it, right? And I think that's, you know, Marie is talking about, I want you to have children. I want you to have this kind of life. So like at the end of Act One, they have to slowly move into their spots. But then when they finally get there, it's this beautiful moment where there's the painting, right? And then we're going to go for as much as we can, as they did in the Broadway, that, you know, pulls down to its scrim. That's the actual painting. So it's replacing. There's just beautiful stuff in it. The people in the painting, in the song, they're singing, and at one point they say forever. They realize that they're there forever. And it's this beautiful, moving moment at the end of Act One. But then what's so brilliant about it is the top of Act Two, they're still there, and they're annoyed, right? There's a song called It's Hot Up Here, which they just want to get out of the painting because they've been there for 100 years. So it's pretty great.
At the start, when you were all getting to know each other and launched this project, did you all together look at the painting, or did everybody go home and look at the painting?
Yeah, we actually looked at it at the read-through, and we talked about it, and I've used it kind of as a tool. Like, I've given them all, you know, a painting, and then I labeled on there, here's where you stand, here's you, right? And so just a real practical kind of compositional thing, but then also the actors have been creating their own sort of backstory for these people, right? It's in the script, but who are these two people with parasols, right? We know that it's Celeste 1 and Celeste 2, but what's the rest of their life? And so I think people have been using the painting for inspiration a lot, actually.
And it wasn't originally in the score, but they added, before they left Playwrights Horizon, apparently, the hat song.
Oh, yes.
Tell us about the hat song.
Yeah, so Finishing the Hat is the name of the song. And, I mean, it's what Sondheim titled his collected book of lyrics, is called Finishing the Hat. The song is George having probably his most introspective moment, talking about how, you know, he's just sort of, things have gone bad with Dot, and he's in the park by himself, and there's a cutout of two different dogs there, and he sings the song to the dogs because, you know, he can't say this thing to another person. And so the song is really about, you know, there's some lyrics in it where it's, no matter what, I'm not going to be the person that, I'm not going to wait for you, she's not going to wait for me, you know, because there's a part of me that's always going to be finishing the hat, meaning like his mind is never going to be anywhere other than mapping out a sky or finishing the hat, right? And then it ends with, one of the things I love the most about Sondheim is he just changes one lyric and it changes the whole thing. He does that over and over. There's some great stuff in Company too where he does that, but the end of the song, he's finishing the hat, and he's sort of annoyed, right? But then he says, look, I made a hat where there never was a hat, right? And it sums up why he does it, why he sacrifices everything else in his life, because he's created something, and it's beautiful. There's actually Ryan Cook, who's playing George, sent me a podcast. It was an interview with Mandy Patinkin, who early on in the process was kind of like, I don't know if I want to do this. There's not really, I don't really have the solo number, blah, 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 blah. But I guess, like, they said to him, his wife came and watched it, and they said, just do the matinee one more time, and then we'll see what you think. And she said, you can never leave this play. So he, like, found the connection, but originally was not really there with it. And that number was added, so that might have been to appease him, I don't know, but if it was, what a great choice. So it ties the whole thing together. I think only someone who is a creative person could write this, because it's examining, like, what are you willing to sacrifice? What are you willing to miss in your life so you can finish the hat? So that because now there's a hat there. And that's not nothing, right? It's a beautiful thing. I've created something. But that comes at a price. And I think absolutely Sondheim chose that because that's had to be what he was thinking about his life, right? Obviously, I think he was a fulfilled person, but I'm sure his art came first in every way.
Tell us the particulars, how we can see it.
So it's at the Maffei Theater at King's College. We run August 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, and then 8th, 9th, and 10th. All the information is on the Gaslight Facebook page. Two evening performances the first week, two the second, and then a matinee on both weekends. If you are interested in getting tickets, you just can visit gaslight-theater.org or just Gaslight on Facebook, and you can find all the particulars there.
Dizzy from the height. Coming from the hat, studying the hat, entering the world of the hat.
We spoke with Dave Reynolds, chair and production manager of the theater department at King's College in Wilkes-Barre, who directs the musical Sunday in the Park with George, Stephen Sondheim, and James LaPine, a Tony Award-winning musical. And it will run Friday, August 1st through Sunday, August 10th at the Maffei Theater at King's College. There are a number of performances Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. And there are Sunday matinees as well at 2. Six performances, Friday, August 1st and Saturday, August 2nd at 7:30, Sunday the 3rd at 2, and then the following weekend in the same pattern, Friday, August 8th, Saturday, August 9th at 7:30, and Sunday, August 10th at 2. Finishing a hat, starting on a hat. For more information on the Gaslight Theater website, gaslight-theater.org. Theater is T-H-E-A-T-R-E. That is a rare chance to experience Sunday in the Park with George, and that's to be presented by Gaslight Theater, Friday, August 1st through the 10th. Shows Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30, Sundays at 2 at the Maffei Theater on the campus of King's College in Wilkes-Barre. For more information on the web, gaslight-theater.org.